I'm Alan Kogan. Join me as I highlight small businesses with interviews on site at distilleries, breweries, and more. My mission is to share the stories of the awesome people behind the craft. Welcome to Crafted Conversations. Well, Sean, we're here at Prospect. Is it distillery? Distillery?
Prospect Spirits.
Spirits. Yes. See, I've noticed a lot of craft distilleries that are popping up have changed from using distillery or distilling. They're using spirits or distillers because they want to be more of a unique brand. So was there any, what's behind Prospect Spirits? What's the naming convention for?
So the first thing that we did was our LLC is called Five Point Spirits.
Ah.
So in El Paso, this area that we're in is called Five Points. So this is, of course, this is central El Paso, very iconic place in El Paso. But we said, you know what, we got to have a DBA just to make sure that we stand out and call it something unique.
Yeah.
So we said, you know, we went through the motions and we said Prospect Spirits just because we want to convey the idea that we're a craft brand. We're not just a distillery just churning out stuff to make a buck. We want to create something unique and something that's going to leave a memorable note on people's palate when they're like, wow, this is something unique coming out of El Paso.
Awesome. Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me here. I'm not from El Paso. I've only been in El Paso once before. We're here for a marathon with some buddies. We're just hanging out 30 minutes away. And I did a quick Google to try to find a distillery to talk to, and you popped up. And I reached out to you and you graciously said, hey man, let's do it. So thanks for having me here. And it's awesome to be here.
Yeah, Alan, I appreciate you taking the time too, because I know you're super busy. The only time that worked for me is a little bit later, and not a lot of people would say, let's come out here and do something like that. Ultimately, my phone number is tied to the Google account. So if you actually look up Prospect Spirits and you want to message me directly, please no spam calls. That's my phone number. If you ever want a tour and you're in town, give me a shout, give me a text. I will always respond and I'll always set you up.
I'll have the video just flash your number on the bottom.
Yeah, no. People got epilepsy, that might be a problem.
Well, tell me about yourself and how you got into this whole business.
Cool, man. So I will not tell you the legal part because that will land me in federal prison. But ultimately, I've been in the alcohol business 18 years. I know I look like a young guy, but I'm actually going to be 37 this year. So alcohol has been very good to me. I've been through everything through bartending, through sales, spirit sales, of course, manufacturing, been associated with certain liquor stores and stuff like that. And I said, you know what? People have asked me plenty of times, why don't you open up your own bar? And I've seen the headache that takes on certain people. And a bar is really a crapshoot. And I said, if I'm going to have a crapshoot, why not go all out?
Yeah.
I'm young enough to take the hit. And this is, we're never going to let this thing fail. I'm going to, you know, be homeless before this thing fails. But ultimately, the idea was to create something of beauty. And just like brewers do, they create something amazing where they're super proud of their beer. Why can't people be super proud of their distillates? And
yeah.
There's plenty of places that pop up. They make great products and they do a fantastic job. So I wanted to take a page out of their book and say, let's do it here in El Paso because no one's doing it. No one's dreaming big. Why don't we dream big? And that's exactly what we did.
I love it. Are you born and raised El Paso? Or
I'm from Houston.
Okay. Texas.
Yeah. So basically I've been here half my life. So who depends on who's asking. I can say I'm from Houston or El Paso. And you know, take either turn.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious too, because there's a lot of people I've talked to in the craft distilling industry that weren't actually originally big whiskey people before they got into it. So I'm curious about your background. Were you always a spirits guy? Were you a beer guy? Were you like, hey, this sounds like a cool job to do? Where'd that come from?
So it's really interesting. I went through the phases of the craft cocktail revival. When I first started bartending when I was 18, I was working at one of a handful of craft cocktail bars here in El Paso, and we did it right. So ultimately the craft cocktail scene was, what spirits can I use? What can I adapt to? What am I learning to build a great cocktail out of? And then I moved to a different bar. Then the craft beer thing was a huge boom here in El Paso, where there was only one craft beer bar. And shout out to the Hoppy Monk of El Paso. They do a great job with craft beer. We were right down the street at Hope and Anchor, and craft beer was our big thing, was just craft beer. And I gained a lot of weight. You know, I was just drinking a bunch of beer, but still ultimately it was always, I'm an easy guy. Every time I go to a bar, people are like, oh, you order craft beer all the time and craft cocktails? No, man. Give me an easy beer. Give me an easy shot. And it's always brown. I drink the brown. I love me some whiskey. So I'm loving the Blanton's hat.
Yeah.
You got to rock some good whiskey, so that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I went to the distillery and I saw the hat, and I'm like, I have to.
Yeah, screw everything else, buy the hat. You're going to wear it every day anyway, right?
Yeah, I get flack for it from some people. But part of the reason why I'm here and why I've been doing this is that I love the story of a small craft operation. The big boys like Blanton's or Buffalo Trace. Well, they're from Buffalo Trace, make Blanton's, but Jack Daniels, et cetera. You sure. know, they make some good product. They have some great history. But they're so massive. They're in 200 different countries. And your local small operation that's, you know, ragtag and making it work.
We're in two states. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And there's some that are way smaller just to a county. And there's some that are craft. They're calling themselves crafts, but they're across the United States.
Sure.
But across the board, they all have interesting stories of how they got there and, you know, really just roughing it. And then also the fact that you guys kind of have more freedom to play. So I'm kind of curious about how important that is that to you to just be like, you're the owner, you're here making it, you can kind of do what you want and what makes good product to you. Is that an important factor to this?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a certain freedom that you have that a lot of people aren't willing to take that risk because they love getting that paycheck. And me, I said, you know what? I'd rather be out here doing the stuff that I love and I want. I want to make the stuff that's going to be plastered everywhere. People are like, this is a great product. I never thought about that. And, you know, I'll go through it when we go through our products. But ultimately, like, if I wanted to make a Fernet, which I did, I was like, I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
No one's there to tell me no.
Right.
No, we have three products that I'm not going to tell you about. They're going to pop up because they're super secret just because there's something they're so magical and they're so tied to the culture here in El Paso and even in Mexico. And no one's done it yet. So the minute we release those, it's going to be something that's going to really put us on the map and still keep us craft where we're doing crazy stuff like that. We're doing interesting stuff to get people in here and saying, where's the distillery exclusive? And we have some of that stuff for you guys to try as well when we get to that point.
Beautiful. When you started, were you sourcing anything or were you making everything yourself?
Nope. Everything was coming out straight from our own products.
Wow.
The only product we do not make is the brown, just because ultimately you have to age stuff.
Right.
And the story will come with that. But of course, we didn't want to lose that in the brown category. This was the last product that we released just because we had great success with the vodka, and you'll try it and you'll hopefully agree with me. The gin was one of the things that people in this town don't drink gin, but ultimately this is our best selling product now.
Really?
And ultimately it's one of those things that I didn't expect that. And in the spirits realm, you never expect anything to be a top seller or a fan favorite until you put it out there. And then people are like, this is top notch stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, you just, once again, can I cuss on here?
Please.
Yeah, you throw shit against the wall and see if it sticks. And you know, that's the way we operate. So we're trying everything and anything. And if something doesn't work, of course, we can retire it. But we haven't gotten to that point yet, which
gotcha.
Is great.
Awesome. Well, before we get to some of the product, because I'm really interested and I want to hear the story about all
you
of them.
You look a little thirsty, yeah.
Well, I always am.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm curious about the space. You gave us a quick little tour before we hopped on the podcast. But it's an awesome space inside. Outside, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. You have you got a little project going on.
Sure.
And I love it. So tell me about the space and how far along you are and what the plan is.
Cool. So when we started looking for a spot, we partnered with a local, real estate mogul who owns a lot of properties here, a lot of commercial space. And I said, look, I'm not going to say his name just for sensitivity's sake, but I said, check it out, man. We're looking for a space. We need this, this, and this. Show us some properties. And we saw some cool spots. We saw even one where it was a slim spot, but it had two stories. And I said, what if we put the distillery on the bottom and then we have like a clear space on top where you can see downstairs.
Ooh.
And then people can check out, you know, like the monkeys working in the factory while they're having a beer or something. And then I thought about it and I was like, well, that's going to be stupid because the minute we start bottling product, imagine carrying 60 cases up those stairs and we have to deliver. I was like, that's just not going to work. We came to this place and this was definitely a project. And for those of you who don't know El Paso, this was a staple back in the day, an old Italian restaurant that was fantastic for about 15, 20 years. And just this place lay dormant for 10. So when you came in here, there was just a caked layer of dust. And I'm surprised I'm not dead from some sort of asbestos or something that we had probably encountered. But the whole build out, I'm sure you guys are going to see in the video of the way it looks, it's fantastic. And it was night and day. So we have some pictures beforehand. I don't know if you would like for me to send those to you.
That'd be great. Yeah.
See them and be like, wow, this place was a shithole beforehand. And now it's just, you know, something unique and pretty nice looking. Yeah. So that's kind of where we got that idea from. And we got a space at 6,500 square feet at a decent rent just because we have room to grow. We thought, you know, people think that we just want to do this for the city. And we do. We want to put El Paso on the map. But we're not thinking our business just to be citywide. The business plan that we wrote was to be citywide, statewide, nationwide in a certain order, just so we can, you know, have exponential growth and see where we're at. But we had a couple snags just because of COVID, and we're barely getting back into the swing of things. So that's ultimately where we're headed.
Awesome. Has there been a good response from the community?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So as you know, and I know, the problem with craft spirits is you have to take away that brand from someone.
Yeah.
Someone here in El Paso, like the big thing, people drink Buchanan's here all the time. People love Jack Daniels. And you never want to bash someone's brand. Like, you've been drinking that, your dad drank it. At the end of the day, you're brand loyal. But now we have the new group of people, the millennials and the younger generation. They're not brand loyal. They want to try everything.
Right.
They'll try us and they'll, yeah, we'll buy a bottle, but they won't be repeat customers.
Mm.
So where do you find that middle ground? People love the stuff, and you know, the bars are really supporting us here as well. So are the liquor stores. Just the money it takes to get people to remember what it is the big hurdle for us.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the cool things about craft distilling too is that there is that community within the craft operations themselves. Have you reached out or talked to people from other states that have said, hey, we own our craft distillery, we want to help you succeed because you're awesome? Has there been kind of a conversation there that's happened?
Not there yet. We've actually encountered more celebrities that want to be a part of our stuff.
Oh, really?
Rather than not. We actually had a conversation with a luchador in Mexico. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a Mexican wrestler. They wear those crazy masks and stuff. And this guy's a big deal. He wants to actually partner with us, and we want to do a 50-50 split where he brings in his tequila and we market it here, and then we do the same thing with our spirits. We take them down there, and
yeah,
we have an export in Mexico. We actually have a good I forget his name. My business partners are in contact with him, but he's a Hispanic rapper who's huge right now, and he wanted to do something with us, and ultimately we're about to hear back from him, see if there's a partnership deal that we can do. The community, as far as the bar community, we've heard from people. A gentleman wrote a book on bourbon. He was like, hey, we have some bourbon in the works in our distillery. Can we house it in your distillery just so we can say we have a project going where we're housing it in different cities so we can say it's like a passport bourbon, if you will. And I was like, that sounds cool. So
right.
We have certain things that are there, but as far as the craft distilleries, we haven't done that outreach yet, which is probably something that we should put on the to-do list for sure.
Yeah, I mean, a big one I would suggest is there's the Distilled Spirits Council, but also the American Craft Spirits Association.
Yeah, for sure.
They have it's just a network of people that do a lot of great stuff together. But I'm also curious about Texas. I'm from Wisconsin originally.
Sure.
And there were liquor stores down the street from my high school, and you could buy vodka. you could buy Everclear in Walmart.
Right on.
They don't care.
That's how California is too, you know?
Yeah, they're just wide open. What's Texas been like? Has that been a learning curve for the, you know, getting the license and distilling spirits, or has it been, have they helped you out, or has it just been a nightmare?
So the problem that we've encountered is Texas. I've been in the spirits industry, like I said before.
Yeah.
So I've been on the sales side where I know that we have to sell to a distributor. I can't go directly to the liquor store and start knocking and being like, yo man, pick up our stuff. And I'm like, cool, just send it over. No, like I have to tell the distributor, pick it up, and then you sell the product for us outside. And one of the biggest things that we've had was we were top dog with our distributor. They were doing great with us because our product is phenomenal. It's local. Our distributor is local, family-owned business.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the support here. They can call me and say, Sean, we need to do a tasting. Can you do that? Cool. The buck stops with me. I don't have to get approval from anyone else. I can say, sure, let's do it and go out there and do it. The problem that we encountered this year is, you probably know, Sazerac dumped Republic, and now they're with Favorite Brands.
Yes.
Here in Texas, and that was our distributor.
Oh.
So now we're on the back burner because they have to sell X amount of Fireball. They have to sell plenty of Blattens. They have to sell 40 plus brands in their family just to be successful with their contract. So now we have to battle more, but internally, to get that done. And to answer your question, Texas has been really backwards in the sense that, like I said before, we're a three-tiered system. So we have to sell to our distributor.
Mm-hmm.
Distributor sells to the liquor store. Liquor store sells to the end consumer. Sometimes they sell to a bar or restaurant. And everyone says, well, that's good. They sell for you. But no, it's not good. Because now we have to take a step back. We have to mark down our products so that we end up being $25, $28, $29 on the shelf by selling $15, $18, $18.50. And it hurts because it's like we have to discount our products just so they can make the markup on their end.
Right.
So that's the problem with Texas.
Yikes. Yeah. It was that some of that stuff you learned when you, did you know some of the stuff going into it as far as?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So our margins are still great. Don't get me wrong. Margins are fantastic. And we do promote a lot of people to come here and do tours, which I do ultimately because at the end of the tour, there's always exit through the gift shop. The fun part about that is we can sell retail. So you come up to my place and say, hey, I want to buy a bottle. Totally. We act like a liquor shop. Totally works. The problem with that is you come to me and Texas is like, yeah, you know what? There's a problem with that because what if there's some sort of money laundering going on? So I have to document every time you come in, you can only buy two bottles, not liters, 750s per month at a time. Yeah. So if you said, cool, I bought two bottles, the family loved it, it's Christmas, I want to buy two more for so-and-so, I have to be like, can't help you.
What? Yeah,
totally.
That is backwards.
It is backwards, but you know what? They throw us a bone and say, hey, at least you can sell out of the distillery. I'm like, that's not throwing me a bone, man. It looks, you're hindering my success. Like, why can't you just let me have a tap room like the breweries? Why can't I just have people over here guzzling it by the gallon? You know, it's just help us out here. And Texas is going to take a long time for us to really twist their arms. And our lease is up in April. So is it a decision that we move to New Mexico and have more lenient laws? This may be something for discussion.
That's not a bad point.
Nope, not at all.
And I know there's a lot. I mean, the craft spirits industry has boomed in the last 5 to 10 years, and it's actually pretty remarkable, kind of corresponding with the craft beer crowd. But there have been a lot of laws that have been reviewed and kind of amended. I know I spoke to someone in Delaware and in Maryland that they actually joined their state's guild and helped write the law that eventually became, because there are some states that didn't even know how to license a distillery.
Sure.
It's like I think DC like codes them as a deli because they don't have a thing.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
A box to put them in.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they sell cocktails, but they also, I don't know. It's
manufacture, weird, if you will.
Yeah.
So I guess so.
So anyway.
No, I totally get it. And ultimately there's a story in Texas where everyone knows Tito's. Tito's is everywhere. Kudos to him. We're not trying to be Tito's. I just want 2% of what Tito's does in my vodka, just because people love vodka and it's one of those things they drink on a regular basis. But he was the single one person that created the ability for Texas to have distilleries, because he was the first. He had that law. He was pushing and pushing and pushing, and he finally got it done. So why don't I take a page out of Tito's book and start a riot in our government and say, look, man, change this up, because we're a small business too. We're going against these guys that have money to crush us like the cockroaches we are.
Right.
So let's do something about it.
I would just start selling products at cost to legislators and just say, hey, maybe not.
You'd be like, hey, man, if you want to slide a case of vodka under your door, I mean, we'll make it happen. Just leave it unlocked and we'll figure it out. You know? We're not bribing anybody.
So yeah, no, total joke.
Yeah.
Well, shall we try some stuff? Walk me through your range.
That way we can chat about it. And then you guys can try some of the stuff. So we always start with the vodka. Vodka was our flagship products. What we have here is we had the idea that every label that we create is going to take a lot of care, because we don't want the label to look like it was made off of Microsoft Paint, as many other labels seem like they are. Every label that we have has some sort of metallic logo on it.
Yeah.
Gold, silver, blue, metallic.
Sure.
We are called Free Range just because we want to be synonymous with the idea of people care about what they eat, why don't they care about what they drink? So we use 100% corn. We are gluten-free. We use corn from Mexico. Some of our friends from down the street have a taco shop where they nixtamalize their own corn. So they order pallets of the stuff at a time. So we just say, with your order, can we just piggyback off of you? And then just that way we don't have to fuck with shipping. And then we can just, you know, start making our own stuff.
Yeah.
We do not actually create this stuff during the summer. We only ferment and distill during fall and spring, just because if you notice, we don't have a glycol system on our fermenters.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
We have conical and jacketed fermenters. But of course, that was one thing, an oversight, just because we said, you know what, we can just cool this room down and it can be really cool. This place does retain a lot of heat and cool air when the temperature is right. But in the summer, if you guys have ever been here during the summer, El Paso is 110 during the day and 98 during the night.
Yep.
So our yeast would not be able to survive that if we actually started fermenting. Even if we had the AC blasting, our profit margin would go through the window just because that AC would always be on. We've tried many things. We said, you know what, let's figure it out. At the end of the day, we couldn't make it work. So we just said, we only have to distill during the seasons that are appropriate for the temperature. Now, as we showed you in the storage room, those big totes that we have, those are all finished product that we distilled. And the reason why we do that is we distill in bulk during those times. So we kind of like forage, kind of like a squirrel. We do it bulk during spring or fall, just so we have enough knowing this will get us through the summer if need be.
Right.
So that's kind of how we do things. So with our vodka here, when we distill 7 times, as you can see with our columns, we have the ability to do that.
Yes.
We also have the ability to create whiskey here. So if we want to just use 2 of the columns to do twice distilled, as bourbon should be, we can do that. We can shut off certain sections of the still and figure it out. So awesome. We distill this to 95% alcohol at the end, as it should be done. We once got it to 96, and I can't tell you how we did that. It was one of those things they said you can't do it without a certain way of science or a lot of heat exchange. And we figured we did something crazy, something unique. So I said, let's do it again. Never been able to do it again.
Sure.
So at this moment, please do not drink. I want you to just smell the nose, smell the sweetness on that bad boy. The reason why we chose corn was because it has the most fermentable sugars out of it, which will give us the biggest yield. As we ferment and we do the mash in the mash tun, this whole place smells like cornflakes. So we do Uncle Jesse's recipe where we add more sugar into it just to get that yield up, because we want to be at the 22% mark, which we normally don't get to. We get about to the 18% mark if we're lucky on a good day, which at the end of the day, if you guys don't know, which means 18% of our 1,000-liter mash tun will be 180 liters of usable product at the end of the day.
Right.
Which will translate to roughly about 360 bottles if we distill it correctly, which will always be lower.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, what I want you to do is take a small sip. What's going to happen is it's going to hit your tongue. You're going to get vodka immediately. It's going to immediately go away like you drank nothing at all. It's one of the most unique things I've had with vodka, and I can't explain it. I can't tell you why it does that, but we're going to go with it until it stops working.
Yeah.
A problem we have with this is, how can that be a problem? But the thing is, when you pour it at a bar, you pour a vodka cranberry, vodka OJ, people can't taste the alcohol. Right. And then we have a problem where they're like, you didn't put any booze in this. Yes, we did. It's just dangerously smooth. So then people start ordering doubles, and before you know it, they're hammered. And the reason why I'm not joining you guys is we tend to, you know, bottle and distill. And there's times where quality control, I have to sit there and smell it and taste the product at 95%. It's jet fuel, you know? So
yep.
Before the end of the run, I'm kind of like, fuck boys, I'm hammered, you know? So we bottle cases and we have a little bit of drinks on the side. Fun stuff happens. We have a laugh or two. Yada, yada. Come back and do quality control. This guy slipped through the crack.
Ooh.
And I always keep this label and this bottle as a reminder. This is why we don't drink at the distillery, because these mistakes will happen. And this is like Willy Wonka's golden ticket. Like, am I going to give you the keys to this distillery? This is just straight up embarrassing, but it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's when people are always like, you should just throw one in there just because it's... it'll cause a laugh. I'm like, no, I can't embarrass myself like that. So that's the reason why I'm not joining you guys in this little powwow and shindig that we got.
The upside down label has your signature on it, and it's that one in a million that you find now.
Right. One of those things. I wanted to kind of copy Garrison Brothers, and you guys are familiar with their bourbon,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So Charlie Garrison came down when I was selling with Republic, and he gave me the story where he's like, you can always tell what time of day it was when you look at the signature on the back, because they all sign every bottle.
Yeah.
And he's like, the signature is when they're crisp and they're nice. This is when we're sober. This is the morning. At the end of the day, when they're all squiggly and messed up, he's like, we've had a little bit too many. And I was like, I don't want to be saying stuff like that. So it's a funny thing, you know, but ultimately no booze for us. We'll keep it really, really simple. We'll keep it business. You guys can have all the fun, and hopefully you like the stuff.
Well, cheers to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very sweet on the nose, and it's 100% corn. But that mouth is just different.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's interesting, and I can't explain it.
Yeah.
One of the things that you'll notice if you actually tilt the glass like wine and you look at the legs that it leaves behind on your glass, the legs that stick on your glass, they're not going to go anywhere. It's a full-bodied vodka. And it's one of those things that it coats your mouth, and it's chewy. It's nice. It's unique. And ultimately, when we start using this for like martinis or straight-up vodkas, people have it on the rocks. And it's surprising to see people drinking vodka on the rocks unless they're Russian. It's one of those things that just really gives me great pride that people can really enjoy this and say some really nice things about it, because I really didn't want to make a vodka. I wanted to make brown. But I was like, we have to make everything that's available to everybody, because once again, try it until it sticks.
Hey y'all, Alan Kogan here with Crafted Conversations. If you want to support the show and the mission of sharing the stories of craft, head over to buymeacoffee.com/craftedcombos. I'd really appreciate throwing a couple bucks my way to help me pay for travel, the equipment that I use, the time that I spend editing, all the software that I use. I really appreciate any support you can give me. And if you can't afford a couple bucks, at least give me some feedback or go over to your YouTube and subscribe or follow us on Spotify. Anything helps to make sure that we share the story of craft and give these small business owners a little limelight and get them out on a platform that really showcases what they're doing. I can't do this without you guys or your support, so I would really appreciate you pitching in and helping out. So I'll see you out there, and I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Can I ask why not put Prospect Spirits as the main name? Because it's unique to me that you have different names for your different spirits. Like,
sure.
Was that just a marketing play that made sense? Or
in my head, we were speaking about Fernet earlier, about how sometimes you just fucking hate something so much, you'll never drink it again. My idea was each one is its own individual brand. If you look at our Instagram, each one has its own Instagram. It's not Prospect Spirits family. It's each individual brand. Because what if you really get a bad hangover from Free Range? You have 3/4 of a bottle in one sitting and you're like, well, shit, that really fucked me up.
Yeah.
I don't want any association with Brindle or Alley Cat. I don't want to touch any of that stuff. So the identity thing was keep them their own separate identity. See what actually does well, and then let people know and educate them. You like Brindle? Oh, check it out. We have a VAT pack, which is a value-added pack at the store, where you get a tiny 50 ml of Alley Cat. Try it out. You may not like gin, but try our gin. Mm. And they're like, oh, it's the same family. Great. But ultimately, we don't want them to be associated with each other just for that reason.
No, that's smart. Yeah, the Instagram account thing was what tipped me off originally, and I was like, I'm trying to figure out like what.
Great question.
Who is what?
Yeah. Are they still the same family? Are they still making the same stuff? It's one of those things that we get often asked often, like, why not just call them Prospect Distiller? And we were in a bar down the street that had us on draft, and they were calling it the Free Range Distillery, and I had to go over there and be like, no, this is not right. We have to fix the way you present it because it's going to confuse a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that's the way we did it. This, if you notice, does not have El Paso on it at all, just because we have the address on the back as all distillates need to.
Yep.
The reason why we don't have it is, once again, we're thinking not just in this city. So what you do is have Texas with the star with our location on it. And that's kind of just the nod that we have to El Paso. We're never going to say we're not from El Paso. We're just not going to have it plastered all over the bottle. And ultimately what had happened was, we had a really bad massacre here where we had a mass shooter take down a lot of people in a Walmart. RIP to the families, and our thoughts go out to them. But there was a lot of things going on where people were slapping these stickers and these labels on where it was saying El Paso Strong. Mm. And my thing was, I'm not going to take a tragedy and put it on our product to sell product.
Sure.
So I said, we're not going to be associated with any of that stuff. I'm not saying that we're insensitive to it, just saying that we're not going to use that marketing ploy to try and get sales.
Sure. I can respect that. But yeah, that's good vodka.
Are you guys done with your sample though?
I can be.
There's also no reason for you guys to chug them down. I will not be offended if you don't want to drink them all. One of the ones that you guys will not be trying today, and I'll tell you why, is EPTX. EPTX was created to be our premium well brand. The idea was, this is going to be geared towards hotel bars, where you keep it in the well. This is going to be the product that's between $11 and $13, where they can actually afford it. And people that come in from out of town, like, do you have anything local? Yeah, you're drinking our house vodka. The reason this is different is, this is six times distilled, and it makes a big difference.
Huh.
This one, that one distillation, separates these two from being a super premium brand at a call price versus a premium well. So we do this one more cost effective. We don't use the reverse osmosis water that we use for this. We just use straight distilled water, and it makes it less palatable, but also more affordable.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
That makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Any questions on Free Range?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty awesome. I guess for you're sourcing from corn from Mexico.
Yeah. When
you can. Are you sourcing anything else locally from Texas just to have that?
Unfortunately not. I wish we could.
It's a cost thing. I know a lot of people try to do it, but
there's certain things like the sugar that we would like to partner with certain producers, maybe use sugar cane or sugar cane juice that would actually pretty much help the flavor, but you have to order a certain quantity, and that quantity is really high up there. It's something really, we're not producing as much that. We're nowhere close, so we're not going to sit on pallets of sugar cane and just be like, well, we're good for the next 10 years. Nah, we're none of that.
Fair enough.
You guys ready to move on to the gin?
Let's do it.
Cool. So we're going to use the same glasses. This is the same thing we do with wine.
Okay.
Instead of just rinsing it out, what we do is we just add it to it, since this is actually made from the vodka, and I'll explain why.
Okay.
We call this Free Range 2.0. And the reason why we call it that is because when we distilled this the first time, this whole place smelled like a perfume store. And if you actually put your nose to the glass and start smelling what we have there, you'll notice that bouquet on it comes right out.
It's very floral.
It slaps you right in the face.
Yeah.
So imagine that with a distillate that we have here. The whole place smelled like gin. And I couldn't pick up the heads and I couldn't pick up the tails. Oh. I couldn't separate it. And I was like, guys, what the fuck are we going to do? And I was like, you can actually get it and find the fusel oils and you'll find a little bit of slickness in your fingers. But I was like, it might be too late. I might ruin the batch. And I was like, shit, what do I do? I was like, well, why don't we just use Free Range? Let's distill Free Range in bulk,
mm-hmm.
run it once more through the gin basket, then the condenser. So this runs it two more times. So this is 9 times distilled.
Wow.
Yeah, so adds 2 more distillations. So when we do all the cuts with Free Range, this is guaranteed to come out no heads, no tails. So when we run it, we just have to set it and forget it until everything comes out. And then we're like, cool, we're good with the gin. A lot of people do not like gin for the reasons that these big companies make London Dry. They throw, okay.
Yeah, I've never been a gin guy. And now I've talked to more craft distillers who are making good gin
right.
that isn't London Dry. So
right. yeah.
Talk more.
Cool. So the London Dry thing, people are proud that we put 22, 23 botanicals in there. Bro, you're just muddying up your own product.
Yep.
And they're like, well, no, it's just supposed to be a complex flavor. No, it's not. I want to sit there and I want to taste everything that I'm going to tell you right now. I want to sit there and be able to taste all the individual flavors and pinpoint them and be like, I get it. This is interesting. That's nice. This is more of a summer gin. So what we created here was an Old Tom style gin. Old Tom is a bit of a sweeter gin. What we did is we made this 90 proof. We don't want to fuck around. Gin should be over 80 proof. Should never be 80 proof unless you're drinking the wall shit, which no one should, because that's absolute rocket. What we have here is the idea that we're only going to use 9 botanicals. And I want you to find them all just because they're great. The 5 I disclose, juniper, lemon peel, orange peel, cardamom, and rosemary. The stuff that we use is very friendly in cooking as well as gin. So that lemon peel and orange peel come out right away. As soon as you taste it, you're like, wow, that's very citrusy, but then very floral at the end. So this, like I said, this changes a lot of people's mind on what gin should be, because they're always used to something that's so crap, so much garbage, so muddied, that when you get a good gin, something that you can actually start adding a splash of water, splash of soda, it opens it up. You can sit on the patio by the you know, freshly cut lawn, or sit in the backyard by the pool and really enjoy this. Add a couple cucumbers. We're making an awesome cocktail with this called a Theodore, which is this, lime, ginger ale, muddled cucumbers. So delicious, so refreshing, something that's so easy to make at home. And you don't have to be that guy who calls himself a mixologist to do it. You just make it for your friends and everyone's like, wow, you do a good job, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic, because that citrus it's a lot of orange peel right in your mouth.
Thank you.
This punches you in the face. And I love that. My biggest thing with gin has always been that Pine Sol, just Christmas tree that cheap gins are, and I can't stand it.
You're out there licking pine cones, right?
Yeah, no, thank you. But no, this is great.
I appreciate it. So the only problem that we have is the name is going to change on this, because we got a cease and desist letter from a brewery in San Diego called Alley Cat.
Really?
Yeah, and I got really upset about it, because you're like, come on, bro, it's apples and oranges. You're sitting here telling us we can't produce our gin because you have a trademark on a beer. So what we did is we changed the name to 8 Lives, and the branding is still all the same.
Okay.
Font's still the same. If you notice, we have a story about the reason why we called it Alley Cat here, and I can explain a little bit about the story.
Sure.
Back in London, when you were actually walking down the street, you would find these cat gargoyles that denoted a bar. And the way it would work is, instead of going in there and being like, I'm going to go have a quick liquid lunch, you would slide money into this little area, this little change drawer. Bartender would grab the cash, throw the gin down the tube, a serving of gin. You would sit there, drink it out of the tube, keep walking. So you'd just be on the street and get hammered. So we said, you know what? Old Tom, Alley Cat.
Yeah.
You know, Tomcat, Alley Cat.
Yep.
Cool thing. So that's the story on that. We said, let's change that. Our news story is bashing the brewery that decided to make us change the name, and we spell it out and say, this is the reason why you can't enjoy Alley Cat anymore. And people are so happy about it. On the side, instead of having the branding here, we have a set of 9 cats with 1 on an X of it. We lost 1 life. But you know what? We're still alive.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's clever.
So once again, this was our least selling product when we had released it in 2021. And now it is our top selling product. People can't get enough of the gin, which is amazing.
Yeah, I've noticed that gin is starting to creep into people who don't drink gin for this very reason. It's very different. It's not a gin that you think of.
Sure.
So that's fantastic.
I appreciate it.
Have you played with any barrel aging?
Yep.
I've found a lot of gins I love that are barrel aged, and it's even better.
I can let you try some. We did a Pinot Noir barrel
that
came out quite nice. We still have probably like 8 cases of it. The problem is, we need to absorb that flavor and that color. Looked great. It was nice and pink. It was really cool. Let's make a pink gin. Alley Cat was supposed to be pink at first. This was supposed to be negative space. So there wasn't supposed to be just a raised up label. So you can see that pink pop.
Yeah.
And then as you go down the label, it goes away and it's just clear.
Yeah.
But ultimately, when it turned a different color, it ended up turning piss yellow. And I don't want anything piss yellow out on the shelves. So we said, all right, let's take a step back on that. Go back into R&D and figure it out. And it's still just sitting there. One of those things like, if you want to buy it, you can, but I'm not going to sit there and go and give you the hard sell, you know?
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. So we've experimented quite a bit and we're stuck with this. We wanted to do something a little bit more interesting, but ultimately we want to stick with the core 3. We have 4 new products coming out. One of them I'm going to let you try is the Fernet, but when we get after the bourbon, just so you can make sure you don't fuck up your palate with all the flavor punch before we get into the brown, which I know you guys are pretty excited about.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, whiskey is my number one.
Good.
Scotch is actually, Scotch whiskey is my go-to, but I've been doing a lot more craft distillery talks and tours with this, which means bourbon and rye are coming back up to number one. So it's like, well, if I want to go enjoy a smoke bomb with Lagavulin at home, I will, but
it's going to be there waiting.
I know, exactly. Exactly. I love the smaller stuff. So you all, I'm about done with this, so start telling me.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to let you take your time on that. You can always revisit it. Once again, I'm not going to be butthurt if you don't drink it. It's one of those things that we have plenty to drink here, and you guys do have a drive back to Horizon, which can be a bit of its own challenge. So I'm going to grab the bottle that we have open here. So we have Brindle here. It took us a long time to come up with a name on that. And the reason why was a lot of the stuff was already taken. People have come up with unique names. I mean, you have stuff that's called like Dimple Pinch, you know, that people are like, what the? What? You know, we almost called this Giggle Mug.
Giggle Mug.
Giggle Mug, which is a fun way of saying, you know, someone, I think the definition is someone who's always in a joyous laughing mood, which is someone you want like at a comedy show, you know, because your jokes will always land. You always have that person, ah, ha, 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 ha. All right, cool. That person's a Giggle Mug, you know? But we're like, it's too silly. Can't do it.
Yeah.
So we ended up stopping on Brindle just because we said, let's do Brindle for like Brindle dogs. But it turns out the moth here as our label is the local moth of El Paso called the Brindle Moth. So if you guys ever, do you guys smoke cigarettes at all or anything like that?
Cigars.
Cigars. So if you guys are out in the patio in Horizon smoking a cigar in the backyard, you may encounter one. It'll be a big moth flying by with the porch light. You'll be like, holy shit. And like, that's the Brindle Moth of El Paso. This is the only bottle that says El Paso, Texas on it. We go by our slogan, Carpe Noctem. Seize the night, because everything happens that should happen and the fun stuff happens at nighttime. We can be day drinkers all we want, and you know, we can be home by 8 and go to bed and wake up with no hangover. Yeah, that's fine. That's adulting. At the end of the day, you guys are going to do this on Saturday, so you guys are going to have a great time. So I know you guys are going to seize the night for that for sure. What we have here is actually a blend. What we said is we had to source this just because the products that we made before weren't up to my snuff. The first bourbon that I created was great, but it didn't meet my standards. Threw it down the drain. The second bourbon I created, great, threw it down the drain. Did not meet the standards, and we're gonna keep trying until we get it right. Problem we have in El Paso is, once again, during the summer, you have that 110 during the day, 98 during the night. We're losing 40% to the Angel share, which isn't viable for any type of bourbon.
I wasn't asked about that.
So the thing that we need to do is figure out someone that we can actually do a transfer and bond and say, can we send you our bourbon and you house it in your warehouse for the duration of time, and ultimately we'll figure out a way to share the profits with you just so we don't have that much loss, because it's killing us. We cannot age anything here at all just because that Angel share really kills us. So that was our biggest difficulty with making bourbon, was just how are we going to age it? So we said, keep sourcing, keep blending. So we created this proprietary blend. What we have here is a 3-year high rye from Indiana, 21% rye, mixed with an 8-year straight bourbon from Kentucky. We wanted to bring down that rye to about 12 to 15%, make it a bit sweeter, and then just say, okay, it's more palatable. It's not as spicy, but it's still really delicious. So it's a 3 mixed with an 8, 30-70 split, just so we can say this is a proprietary blend. Yeah, we don't own the product. We don't make the product, but we own the blend. This is what we wanted to do. If you notice, the color is a little bit hazy.
Yeah.
We do not chill filter our bourbon. The idea is when you chill filter it, you're removing a lot of the flavor. And you want to just say, okay, I don't want any pockets of the lipids to appear during the cold, and I don't want people to be turned off by it. So what we do is we put, during the winter, we put special tags on the bottle that say, warning, do not be afraid. Whatever is in here that is floating around will not hurt you. Pick up the bottle, shake it around, they'll go away.
Yeah.
Those pockets of fat are exactly what you want in your bourbon. You want it to be huge and chewy, great mouthfeel. We didn't want to be 80 proof. We wanted to be 88 proof. We want to be higher than that. We want someone to sit there and enjoy it, feel that bite. But yet when you try this, you're not going to get that bite. You're not going to get that burn. There's not a lot of heat to it, which is perfect for us. Get that sweetness on the end. You get that honey, leather, oak, a little bit of vanilla, all encompassed, well-rounded, great bourbon. People just tend to end up making unique stuff with this, but you know what? Just stick with an old fashioned, stick on the King's Cube of ice, go with the stuff that works, play the hits.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's any questions on our brindle here?
I'm curious, and you don't have to tell me if you don't want to. I'm assuming Indiana is MGP, and are you allowed to disclose the Kentucky 8-year?
I'm sure you can guess it. What's a popular 8-year from Kentucky?
You know.
Heaven Hill?
Is it Heaven Hill?
It's not Heaven Hill.
Could be Barton.
I'll put that it has a sort of a paper label on it, a loose paper label.
Basil Hayden?
Yeah, Basil Hayden. Okay. So Jim Beam. Interesting.
So those are the ones that we use just because it's more economical to say, I want to use a higher tiered bourbon that's not an expensive price. Because in 8-year, we could have used Buffalo Trace. I mean, it's super inexpensive. But I'm not going to sit there and say we're partnering with someone who's already making great bourbon. We want to create something with a unique twist on it and give it a fun little nod to the great bourbon drinkers out there.
Yeah, that's an easy drinker.
Thank you.
I love a high rye bourbon.
Me too.
So, yes.
A lot of places are like 4%, 5. No. We got to hike that up. We don't want to do it too high. So I don't want to make a rye per se, but we may get there. We may get there to be 51%.
For the bourbon that you will eventually make yourself.
Sure.
What are you looking to do? What's your ideal? You don't have to tell me your mash, but are you looking to make like a high rye, or do you want?
It'll be similar to this.
Okay.
So it'll be definitely around 75% corn. Gotcha. I want it to be sweeter, and I want it to be chewy like this, but I do want that rye content and to be there. The malted barley, I don't want that to be too heavy. I want it to be there to be present, as all of them should be, but I don't want it to be no more than 5%. So that mash bill should be 75, 20% rye, 5% malted. That's probably what we're looking at.
Okay, cool.
So now, whenever you guys are ready, we have some cool stuff here. I was not going to open this because this was for a client that bought it. This was a Christmas release, a limited release. I made this specifically for some special clients for us that have been great bourbon fans. This is, of course, barrel strength.
Yeah.
So undiluted, great color.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually made these clay medallions to denote the bottle number on it. Only 24 were made.
Oh, that's unique.
Yeah. So I do a lot of ceramic work on the side. So what I do is I make special mezcal cups for people that want to get them at home. And, you know, I get a wheel and I'm like ghost, you know, spinning them out, and throwing them down. They're actually really pretty. And I said, you know, why not just make some stuff for the business and make them like unique. These are cool little keepsakes and stuff like that. And people chose their own numbers. They didn't go in specific order. No one's like, I want number one. No, people are like, I like number 7 because it's my favorite number. Cool. Number 7's yours. So these guys were limited release. I only have 3 of these left. It was one of those things where I wanted to do something special this year. And then, of course, this year coming up, probably make like 36 and then see if we get more response to sell out. Because literally, I sold out in an hour. I posted it on the company page and people blew it up, and you know, it was perfect time for Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
And people loved it. People are still drinking it, of course, because there's not a lot of heat on it. There's not a lot of, you know, bite, but it is something you have to be weary of since it is 58.5.
Very cool.
Let me know when you guys are ready for it.
While I'm finishing this up, we mentioned rye. Are you looking at doing a rye, maybe a single malt? Are you doing export? I know you said you have four that you won't talk about, but
No. I mean, those the bourbon stuff in the brown category, I'll talk about that all day long.
Okay.
It's stuff I do want to do, and people are expecting it. So we do want to have a family. We want to be similar to Balcones, where they have, you know, the rye, the baby blue corn only, the brimstone, where they do a little bit of smoke in there. We want to have that family of brown where you have stuff to choose from and have a unique experience where you don't have to settle on just a regular bourbon, even though the response has been great. I mean, we don't hide the fact that we source just because we're honest with people. We don't want to lie to anybody about anything we do here, but people are still gravitating towards the brown, even though we told them, like, hey, this is the product we don't make. Give me that brown, man. I'll fucking drink it all day long. So, cool. We're never going to take this off the shelf because it's been an amazing response. I have one of the fucking few shirts that I made off of, like, you know, some shit-ass website, and I still rock this thing, you know? And people are like, I want one like that. I'm like, this is a one-off, man. Ain't gonna happen.
I love it. I love it. Well, yeah, let's try that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course. By all means, guys, I am not here to get you hammered, but if you want to revisit anything, everything is on the table. Please help yourselves. I'm not here to stifle your good time. I'm here to be as hospitable as I can to you guys.
So enhance it.
Please help yourself with any more that you'd like.
That's one of the tricks of the trades I'm still learning is that, you know, I come talk to you guys about your work and you're excited to show me and give me all the samples. That's great. But I often have situations where before and after we actually are doing the thing, which we're doing right now on recording, they're like, hey, try this, hey, try this, hey, try this, hey, try this. It's like, man, I need to buy a chauffeur.
Yeah, you're like, God, I need to take a quick nap.
It's on the budget.
Hey, man, you're going to blow your rent budget or your hotel budget on an Uber back.
Yeah, right. So this is the same juice, just barrel strength.
Same stuff, undiluted. Got some punch to it. Definitely some fun stuff, but it is still that really nice flavor that you expected. And, you know, I went gorilla on this and I said, you know, I'm just going to do handwritten labels, make it more personable. And it may look shit ass, but I was like, you know what? This is one of the things that you're not going to be able to replicate. And we're not making special labels for that purpose just because I wanted this to be more personable. Like, oh, man, this guy just wrote it out. Fuck me, man. You know?
Right.
Something cool.
I think there's a little bit to that, and maybe you can speak to that, there's a perception in the market of, like, you know, the big boys have this massive marketing PR firm, but here I am talking to the owner and operator of this place with a handwritten bottle, and I think people gravitate towards that kind of product more, that, yeah, they're going to buy their Buffalo Trace, and that's fine. It's good bourbon. But that's a massive factory doing a bunch of crazy stuff. You're just here doing it. And
sure.
I don't know if you could speak to that. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, part of the process that I really enjoy is telling people, like, these things that are on there, it takes us anywhere between 1 to 4 minutes to start and finish one bottle.
That's a lot of time.
Maybe sometimes six, because when we actually start bottling it, there's a weird little phenomenon that happens we call the galaxy, where once you bottle it, these tiny bubbles come up. And you can also tell the proof of something just by the amount of bubbles come up. But they take forever to rise to the top. So when you do quality control, they make me do quality control, or my business partner, Andres, one of the founders, we'll sit there and we'll put it up to the light and we'll take a look at every single square space of this to make sure there's not a piece of anything floating in there. Because the problem that we have is we have to turn off the air conditioning when we do this in the summer or the spring when we bottle, just because the air conditioner throws so much crap in the air. And when that happens, you get a lot of lint and stuff in here when we do the filtration. And we double filter, but it's still sometimes things slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's one of the things that we have to send it back, do it again, send it back, do it again. And sometimes we bottle 4 cases a day. Sometimes we bottle 16. It just really depends on how good we are at catching that lint and that filtration in the process.
Yeah.
So no one gave us a manual on this. There's no manual at all. So one of the things that we did is when we first started bottling the stuff, we just got straight from our cases from our glassware and started bottling it.
Ah.
And we forgot to rinse the bottles. So we bottled, you know, 14 cases and we're looking at it and there's a whole bunch of shit just floating in there. We're like, oh my God, it's probably the stuff from the cardboard box. So we had to wait for the bottle washers to come in and we had to rebottle, dump it out. And
oh
yeah, I mean, it was, that happened. And There were so many little things that just got in the way where like, fuck. One of the things that we did was the first labels that we did on the back, we flipped the barcodes. So there should be a 14 number barcode for the cases, 12 digit barcode for the bottles.
And they were reversed.
We reversed it. Oh. So we had a whole bunch of just trash. Expensive trash.
Crap.
Yeah, so we had to reorder labels, and that set us back another like $700. And
the woes of a small business.
Yeah.
That's, oh God. Have there been any happy accidents that you were just, you know, you?
The creation of Free Range.
Yeah.
Okay. It was one of those that just the way it came out, like literally, I shit you not, everything that we did was first try. And everything that came out, we were just completely overwhelmed by the production process of it. And the end result, we're like, we don't need to change the what's the word I'm looking for, not the gin mash, the botanical mix for the gin, just
oh, sure.
It came out first try.
Yeah.
And the four ingredients I don't disclose, they're the secret ingredients, really round it out. And I always tell people, like, you'll try it and you'll taste something very familiar, you can guess all you want, but I'm not going to tell you. But yeah. It was still one of those things that we put it in there, and we loaded our gin basket all the way to the top, probably about like 40 pounds of shit. And this is why it's so pungent, so great, because we can do that run twice.
Yep.
And be like, it'll still be able to let out more of those oils into the gin. Like, fucking A, man, this thing is great, you know? And we just didn't have to change anything about it. The blend with Brindle, we've just been fortunate. What I'm gonna show you with our Fernet, same thing. I created that bad boy because I always wanted to create a Fernet. I was a Fernet head all my life. And I was like, dude, I wanna create something so botanical forward, so unique, that people are gonna stop and say, this is not the Fernet that I'm used to, but I like this. And literally, I'm selling bottles of this without a label because people try it and like, bro, I wanna take this home and buy it. Go for it. I'll sell it to you without a label if you're cool with it.
Yeah.
This is the way we do that.
Well, that's a good segue, so.
Yeah.
Fernet.
Yeah, definitely. You guys ready now?
Yeah.
Cool, you can always go back to your bourbon. You don't have to chug that. We'll use your gin glass just because this was a similar family of
product.
Spirits, yeah. This is called Fat Wolf. The reason why we called it that is because one of the ingredients we use in this product is called Gordo Lobo. And in Spanish, that translates to Fat Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
What that is actually a certain type of root / flower that a lot of people know in this region just because you get sick. Your grandma's like, oh, mijo, here, drink some Gordo Lobo, and makes you a tea, and you're like, oh, thanks, grandma, and you drink it, and you're like, oh, I feel better. And it's just one of those things that reminds you of that time where this is almost like good remnants of chamomile tea. It's sweet, it's pungent, 41% alcohol, 82 proof, really nice on the tongue. You don't taste that burn. You don't get any of that stuff. But I have no idea what the fuck to do with this. I'm like, do I put this in the cooler? Is this going to be a cold box drink? Is this going to be something where we mix it with a gin cocktail and we make something, a unique fizz or something? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But when we launch this, I'm going to create an event and say, guys, we have a bartender event where best cocktail wins. We're going to see what you guys can do with this creatively and see where your mind goes immediately when you try this. And people are always very excited about this product, which is so unique, so different, so fun.
I've only had a few Fernets. I'm not a Fernet head as you are.
Yeah.
But it's very refreshing and very, it's kind of viscous. It kind
it's
of sticks
light.
To your teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's definitely something where during the cold season, I was making some hot water cocktails. Like, let's make a toddy.
I was going to say a hot toddy.
Yeah. Where we just say, let's throw some Brindle in there and maybe a half ounce of that. And it
yeah.
just kind of really started to open things up and make something unique.
Mm. That's fun.
It is fun.
That's fun. When's the release going to be?
I have no idea.
No idea?
So we, once again, we started on the labels. The only thing holding us back is the label. Just because the label we created was a very minimalistic label, which I'm not against. Just it's one of the things that, one of the few things I'm not hands-on with, just because the programs that they use are very intricate programs on the iPad, and I don't use Apple products. So I said, you guys handle that department. You guys handle the creative. I will handle the approval where it's like we all agree on the label and say, let's move forward or let's change this. And once again, every label that we've done was anywhere between three and five months of just work. How do we get this to look different or unique? Going back to it, the Alley Cat label, one full label. It's not two separate labels.
Yeah.
The brindle label is a diamond rhombus on both sides, just because we wanted to make the labels unique. If you actually feel the craft paper on that, that's not something that you would find off of pretty much anything. It's just a really nice feeling label.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to go for quality. And that's the same thing we want to do with Fat Wolf. We want to make something unique and fun where the label looks great, product is great. Because I'm going to tell you right now, going back to that conversation where you don't want anything to look like piss on the shelf, that is not appealing. But you're going to pass by that and be like, the fuck is that? I'd be like, that looks interesting. Why is there a fat fucking wolf on the label? You know, if we go down that direction,
yep.
I have no idea. But the idea is we want to make something eye-catching. And even if it's, you know, putting a pig in a dress, we're gonna do it, you know?
I love it. Embrace it.
Yeah. So ultimately, what sucks the most about this is we had a beautiful bottle for Alley Cat that had its own unique shape, and I can show it to you after we're done talking. But when we wanted to buy more, the manufacturer says we're no longer making that bottle. So now we had to say, well, we're all using brindle bottles for Alley Cat now. And not that I hate it, just
yeah,
it took away from the branding a little bit.
Right.
It kind of hurt. And then, of course, now that our variable costs, looking at our financial statements, we always evaluate where our problems are at. Our biggest problem now is the glass has shot up. We order glass now. We have to order by the pallet. And then when we order by the pallet, shipping cost is insane,
yep,
where it's almost half the price of the product itself. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, dude, I'm going to go, I think it's in Kentucky where they manufacture them. I'll go up to Kentucky right now and get a U-Haul and I'll bring that shit back. And I was like, would that really be cheaper? I don't know. Logistics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a testament to the small business and craft operation that you're doing. And
yeah.
I am kind of curious too, and you don't have to disclose the secret for that you're doing, but is there something that you've been waiting and chomping at the bit to create? Is there something coming up that's like, this is what I want to do that I haven't been able to do yet?
The specialty cordials, the ones that I told you that were coming out.
Yes.
They are phenomenal. Okay. They are something that we've created unique, like I said, to the culture of this city, that once we put on a label that looks very similar to what we're trying to replicate, it's going to sell itself. We don't need to put any advertising on it. We'll just sit there and say like, take a look at this.
Yep.
Try it. It's good. It's great. And I've had massive success going to the bars just because I've been in the bar industry long enough where if the person doesn't know me, if they know me, that's an easy sale. If they don't know me, I move on to the fact that it's local. If they don't give a shit that it's local, I'll say, just try the product and it's good. And they'll sit there and say, we'll bring it in for you. The idea that we had launched during COVID was a huge setback for us because in this business, brands are built on premise where you go to your local bar and you say, hey, you know what? What do you recommend? What's new? What's fun? Your bartender should know more than you if you're at a great bar. And they'll serve you something nice. And you say, what is this? And you'll say, oh, it's this brand. It's actually local. And then they give us a testament where I do bar trainings where they know exactly how to say the spiel that I gave you. And the people are like, where can I buy this? Oh, we're available in Specs. We're available in Total Wine. Shout out to Juanitos, big supporters of us in the Lower Valley, a local liquor store, great price. We're pretty much in every major liquor store here in the city, except in WB, just because I have to travel to fucking Dallas and be like, all right, you corporate fat cats, what do we need to do to make this happen? You know, and yeah, that's going to be a headache too, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. Well, you have some stuff, some pretty good stuff going.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
I love your enthusiasm for the product and your care for having a good product. I think that's very important, especially at a time when a lot of people are just kind of cutting corners and making things just to make it and sell and make money, right?
Sure.
Making money is important, obviously. You can't do things for free, but you're doing it the right way. And I love that.
I appreciate it.
I love that we're here at the distillery seeing your awesome process. And I hope the space works out for you. If it doesn't, hopefully you find a home that, yeah, knock on wood for sure. But I think the future is bright. So you have some great products, and I really appreciate your kinship and in spirits and your hospitality having me here. So
no, of course, and I appreciate having like-minded individuals come in here and sharing some of the fun stuff that we have. And I can talk about this all day. Ultimately, if you want to say, you know what, you guys just want to pour yourself another one and kick back, help yourself, you know. So like I said, this house is meant for people to come and enjoy this stuff. And if they can hear me gab a little bit, that's a little bit extra. If you want me to shut the hell up, I can do that too. It's not a problem.
Right. No, hey, cheers to that.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
For sure.
So, well, hey, Sean, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Alan, my man.
I'll be in touch. I will be back to El Paso.
I'm not going anywhere until I die or they fire me.
Same. But cheers, brother. Thank
cheers.
You.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate a follow and share on social media, subscribe to our YouTube, and be sure to give us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Everything you see and hear is out of pocket for us, including travel. If you support our mission of showcasing the amazing stories behind these small businesses, do me a favor and head over to buymeacoffee.com/craftedconvos. Buy Me a Coffee is an awesome way to help creators like me with simple one-time donations or a monthly contribution. Every dime goes into giving these breweries, distilleries, and more some much-deserved limelight. If you have any questions or concerns, please reach out. Cheers!